You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey everybody, Scott Burnside back for another edition of Two Man Advantage, the podcast, the athletic hockey show. The dust is literally just clearing from trade deadline 2021. Pierre LeBrun, how are you feeling? I always worry a bit about you after trade deadline because, man, you carry a lot of water during the trade deadline for the Athletic, of course, for TSN. Are you doing okay? How are you feeling today?
Well, I feel better today than I did probably yesterday. So good timing on us to take that extra day before we did our podcast. I was, again, let's not take ourselves too seriously. We're so lucky and privileged to do what we do for a living. We're not rocket scientists, but I'd stayed up till 2 a.m. on Sunday night, hoping they would announce Hall, and they actually did announce it till the next day. Went to bed at 2, woke up at 5:30. And then TV, including RDS, from about 7:30 to 5 p.m. And then just to put the little cherry on the sundae, a Habs broadcast on Monday night. Someone sent me a text that they saw me during one of the intermissions and said, "You look like a zombie, dude." I said, "I feel like a zombie." So it was all good. It was a fun day. I mean, as I said to you last week, the people behind the scenes at TSN are the ones that actually make the show happen. Those of us in front of the camera just have to smile and break the odd story. But it was, and a new way of doing it. I did it from my home studio. Darren Dreger did it from his home studio. We're still in a pandemic, especially in certainly in Ontario. So it was a trade deadline show done in a different way. And I, quite frankly, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I thought it was good. I thought the show looked good. In fact, it took me a while, like the trained observer that I am, I was like, that set looks different. And then I was like, oh no, they're at home, and which makes sense given, listen, things are not great in lots of parts of Canada, certainly in Ontario. So no, good for you guys to make it work. I got to tell you though, the tradey bunch. Okay, come on.
Is that really what you're going to bring up? Because people have been tweeting at me constantly, including a few texts I got from a couple of NHL coaches about Pierre Dreger.
I like that part too.
Well, as I said on air, I feel bad for Dreg. I mean, let's be honest. Yeah. He had to put on some weight when he morphed himself into my body. But
what was it? What did that put me in mind of? Was it Dreger face? Was that Dreger face?
So yeah,
12-13 lockout.
It was during the lockout, one of those long days and nights where we got hoarded into. It must have been an NHL office waiting for an update. Dreary days, right? Covering that lockout, and everyone's just tired. And I took a picture of the crowd of media in this office, thinking I would just tweet out a picture. But Dregs looked up at my camera just as I took the photo and had the look of someone who had just been speared in the throat, and that became Dreger face, and that went viral. And I said to Dregs, "Dude, I'm really sorry, but I literally did not do that on purpose. I was taking a picture of the entire crowd and." Yeah. Dreger face was born. What can I say?
True. Okay, so trade deadline 21. We talked about it a lot, obviously, leading up to it. And I know the number of transactions was down significantly from a normal year. I got to tell you, I still found there was a lot of drama, and I thought you wrote about it very eloquently. But what a sea change, really, in terms of how. We saw GMs approach their jobs and how teams leveraging cap space, using that as an asset, as a piece of their own arsenal to add assets on their own. I think of teams like San Jose and Detroit, and I wonder, if you think this is the kind of, this sets maybe part of a new landscape moving forward, this is how life is going to be, or like a lot of things this season, will we really go back to, you know, sort of a more normal pattern where GMs are looking for players with term, all that kind of stuff? Or do you think this is something we'll see, especially in the flat cap era, that this is going to be the norm?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, as far as a quiet trade deadline, which it was, and we tried to warn people that it would be, it's not just the flat cap. We'll get that in a moment. But also the Seattle expansion draft had a huge impact. I mean, I can tell you there are absolutely teams that told me they begged off some deals that would have made their team better because they would have paid assets twice. They would have paid to get the player now and then paid Seattle to not take a certain player in a couple months. And they didn't want to pay twice for the player. So that certainly cast a shadow on this trade deadline. But the flat cap is independent of that. But of course, in conjunction is a double whammy. But yeah, the flat cap environment and its effect is here to stay until the NHL economy recovers and revenues grow and the cap eventually goes up. You know, if you think about the run on toilet paper at the start of the pandemic last year and how people went to Costco and emptied out the shelves for toilet paper, that's the feeling I'm getting about GMs and cap space right now. If I can give you an example. No, but I mean, there's a bit of panic setting in about, I can't be at the cap here. I need some room to breathe. And so you're starting to see that, and it manifested itself in two different ways. It was the short term. I can only make this trade if I have a third team giving me cap space. So we saw that on David Savard, on Nick Foligno. We saw that on Matthias Janmark, which I would never have predicted, right? But that's how tight Vegas was to its cap. It had to involve its rival San Jose and give the Sharks a Buffalo's fifth round pick that it owned. And so the Sharks did it twice, and it was brilliant. Great work by Sharks GM Doug Wilson and his staff. They got draft picks out of thin air for renting out cap space and didn't even actually, I think when someone was texting me that by the end of the day between those deals, they spent only $80,000 in real money because they sent some players back. So they literally for free got a fourth and a fifth round pick between the Nick Foligno and Janmark deals. And that's what you should be doing. Steve Yzerman did it, got the fourth round pick. And again, for no cash because he sent Lash off. You know, he did it in the David Savard deal. Those were short-term examples of exploiting contenders with no cap space if you're the 13 broker. But the bigger picture story is way more important to me, which is that Washington shocked the entire hockey world with that late-day trade. And at first, you had to sit back and digest it, like four assets for one, two good players involved. Well, why does suddenly Detroit get three extra assets when you got a good player going each way? And then you break it down, you realize that's the cost of having Richard Panik leave your salary cap. He's got two more years at $2.75 million. It is an exorbitant cost, but it is the true cost of the marketplace right now to find some cap room. They got to sign Ovechkin. You know, they got decisions with Seattle, the Caps do. So that's the cost. And good on Steve Yzerman for taking advantage of that. But frankly, probably a smart deal from Washington's perspective to get this done now as opposed to waiting in the offseason when everyone's going to be trying to do this.
Yeah, I got it. Well, I'd love to dive into that because for me, that was, you know, I mean, there were lots of elements to it, but in some ways it was a hockey deal because there were two, Richard Panik, not to diminish Richard Panik, but there are two key elements to this in Jacob Vrana, who, you know, you go back to 18 in that playoff run, really had sort of a breakout season, and but especially in the playoffs, was really dynamic, really was important to the depth that allowed Washington to march to its first Stanley Cup championship. And I think it's fair to say, you know, maybe, you know, he hasn't exactly got to, you know, hasn't maintained that kind of arc. And I just love the, you know, to me, there's a real, this is a kind of move that says, you know, we are not, you know, patience is an important virtue, but we got to move on here. And in getting Anthony Mantha, who had a nice start as the Capitals crush Philadelphia in the first game after the trade deadline. But and to your point, Mantha gives the Caps, you know, some cost certainty. Yeah, he's expensive at $5.7 million, but he's under contract to through 23-24. And this is a team that still has, like, the window's not closed on them. Like, I think this is a critical year for the Caps, and it strikes me that this is a move that speaks to, you got Peter Laviolette there, as you mentioned, you got Ovi, you know, on an expiring contract. I expect he'll be back, of course, but, you know, this is like, there's some urgency in Washington, and I think Anthony Mantha, even though he maybe sometimes drove people crazy in Detroit, I love the fit there, and I think the Caps are going to be a bear. I just think they're going to be a bear come playoff time.
They certainly were in their first game after the deadline.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. But I love that deal because it's so, it really shows, to me, it shows some boldness on both sides. And Steve Yzerman, what a nice trade deadline period for him. And if, you know, and the same thing, maybe this works out for both Mantha and Vrana, but I think Vrana has a chance, you know, to fit into that young core up front and you know, take on a leadership role or a prominent role there, get, you know, and change the scenery for him. And yeah, it's great. I've been more and more impressed with the Red Wings over the last couple of weeks. And I don't know, I think they're closer than people think. They play hard.
Well, there aren't going to be shortcuts with Steve Yzerman. And you saw the program that he built in Tampa Bay, which really was over time. I mean, there was a bit of a tease in the first year he got there. The Lightning went to the conference finals, as you remember, in 2011, Scotty. But that was really, you know, he had made a couple of good moves, but really that's the team he had inherited, right? And but then the work started. And then over time, you know, and I think it's what he's trying to do in Detroit, and it's not going to be overnight, but what he's trying to build is something that has sustainability, where you're taking repeated shots at it. It's not about the 2-year window. It's about several years of being a real knocking at the door team. And that's what Tampa is. You know, that's what he built there. And Julian Brisebois continued to build on that with a number of excellent moves himself, part of that legacy there. And that's what's happening in Detroit, no question. And it's funny, other people have commented on this on social media and in their articles, and it's so true. But two of the greatest players in the history of the game, Joe Sakic and Steve Yzerman, who just continue to sort of, you know, show that they're excelling at being GMs, just like, you know, they were players on the ice, which is not necessarily two things that are guaranteed to happen. There's lots of former players that have tried to run hockey teams that haven't been able to figure it out. So it's pretty amazing. You know, with both Yzerman and Sakic are pulling off in their post-playing careers.
I'm happy to bounce all over the place. I love the segue into Colorado, Joe Sakic. You know, again, people might have felt there was a, you know, that this was a boring trade deadline or whatever. Again, I didn't find it that way. I thought there was lots of drama and lots of, especially, you know, sort of at the end of the day, there were a flurry of trades, as there often are. And I was like, oh, okay, that's really interesting. But I was curious to see how Joe Sakic was going to handle the trade deadline. And again, it was an obvious hole to fill with the finding a backup goaltender, which they did, of course, with Devan Dubnyk. But there were a couple of, you know, just a couple of those subtle moves that put me in mind of, when you look back at recent cup winners, right? What did Washington do? You know, very, you know, sort of quiet move with Michael Kempney at the deadline in 18. And you think about, you know, some of the more subtle moves that teams make. And I thought bringing in Patrick Nemeth and Carl Soderberg, both players that he knew well, who had played well in Colorado, and to bring them back in, I was like, okay, because so much of what we talk about, the trade deadline, and I think even more so this year because of the truncated schedule and playing only divisional hockey, it's so critical for players, you know, to try and assimilate quickly. Well, Patrick Nemeth and Carl Soderberg should have zero problem stepping back into the groove in Colorado, and I love both those ads. And what's not to like about that Colorado Avalanche team?
Yeah, you know, the part that was important for me, as you know, we discussed this in the weeks going to the deadline. The part was that was critical to me was to get another goalie, because there had to be someone in between Grubauer and Johansson in my mind. And listen, Johansson's been fine, but I felt that there needed to be more experience there to avoid the nightmare of last year's bubble playoffs and when they lost their top two goalies. And so I do like the Dubnyk acquisition. I know it was not endorsed by everyone, you know, but the thing is, it's not everyone that can just jump in. It's really hard. You know, Jamie McLellan from TSN, former Flames goalie and NHL goalie and NHL goalie coach who I work with at TSN, he talked about how difficult it is for goalies, some goalies, to join teams in season and adapt to new systems and to the way that the D in front of them react and play and all that stuff that we kind of, I think, overlook as media, but you can only really know as a goalie. It's not for everyone. It is hard for some goalies to switch teams, you know, mid-season. And I think that's why I think that a guy like Dubnyk now that's bounced around a couple of times, a veteran who's been through a lot of adversity, I think you give yourselves a better chance if you're Colorado of hoping he can figure it out on the fly quicker than perhaps someone who's traded for the first time or has been kind of jolted by the move, you know. So I actually like the move, and I think it's given them, listen, you know, the trade is going to be perfectly executed if he never plays a game in the playoffs. That means Grubauer was healthy, right? So,
yeah.
But you need him there, and I think that was really important for Colorado to do.
Yeah, good point.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right. What else? What else we got here? What? I'll just put the ball in your court. What else? Let's talk some of the big boys. We talked about Colorado. I thought it was not surprising, but a number of the top end teams, true Stanley Cup contenders, that made significant moves or shored up depth or plugged some holes. Is there one that sticks out for you? You're like, okay, yeah, that's a nice piece for a team that could run the table.
You know, I think Don Sweeney had a pretty impressive 24 hours when you consider, you know, getting clobbered in that game. Was that on Sunday? Yeah.
Yes.
And all the injuries and this and that. And it just looks like the walls were caving in on Boston. And you hate, and I know from talking to GMs over the years, you hate having to go make deals when all these injuries suddenly happen. Not suddenly in his case, they've had injuries for a while, but you know what I mean? Like the leverage angle and all of it. And I thought he did really well. I mean, Mike Riley's had a surprisingly efficient year in Ottawa. Now we'll see how he adjusts, but I think he took advantage of a bigger role than he's going to have on a better NHL team through the course of his career. But he played well in a top four role in Ottawa this year on a young team. And it certainly got the attention of the Bruins, but I like that pickup. He's a good puck mover. You know, he's prone to turnovers, but again, they're so decimated on D. And of course, Taylor Hall. And, you know, I think you wrote this, Scotty, but I mean, it's doesn't seem to be an in-between opinion on Taylor Hall. And, you know, it's so I don't think he would have been a good pickup for the Leafs, for example. The Leafs have plenty of offense. Yeah. So it really is about the fit in terms of taking a chance on Taylor Hall. I think the fit was right in Boston. They've had that second line hole forever, right?
Yeah.
But it wouldn't have not have made sense for me for Colorado, and I don't even think Colorado tried, but I'm just saying there are certain teams where you're adding Taylor Hall, and I think it's inviting headaches for the coaching staff to figure out how to use him. And that would have been the case in Toronto for me. I do not think he would have been a good fit in Toronto in my mind, but I think Boston was a beautiful fit. It makes sense.
Well, and Fluto Shinzawa and I were talking about this on a breaking news podcast the morning after the trade was announced. And, you know, I feel for Taylor Hall, right? I mean, his comments to me were so sort of raw and honest. That there's a guy. He's a guy that's been rocked, right? He's confidence is at a low ebb, and listen, we know he's a good player, and I'm with you. I think the fact that he can go to Boston, he plays in, he slots into a place behind Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, David Pastrnak. He doesn't have to suddenly, carry a huge weight. He needs to be better than he's been. I think everyone can agree on that. But I think this is a good spot for him to do that, to find his way back to that. And I got to tell you, it's interesting. And that was, how delicious that the first game is against Buffalo, a very chippy contest. And I was watching the Buffalo broadcast, and early on, Taylor Hall, you coughed up a puck and a blind pass up the middle. Oh my gosh, I can't remember. There were a couple of choice comments that really made me arch my eyebrows. So it's definitely some feelings there.
Well, sorry to interrupt, but can we just, the reaction on Sunday night was so over the top by a lot of people on social media about the fact that the Sabres, got just a second round pick. Can we please understand the dynamics of this trade?
Yes.
Now, I'm not suggesting that perhaps a more veteran GM couldn't have still handled this differently. I think that's a fair comment. But Taylor Hall had a full no move. And as I tweeted yesterday, and it seems to have gotten some reaction on Twitter, but only because I know it to be true, the Sabres had a better offer on the table from a team in the West. But Taylor Hall is a full no move. He dictates where he goes. And why? So it's like the reaction right away, well, should have got this, should have got that. That'd be great. Too bad he had a no move. I mean, when a player has a full no move, it cuts the market down by 80%. And it just becomes like, if you're the team selling him, maybe you try not to give the guy no move when you sign him. But clearly he probably wouldn't have signed him, Buffalo, back in the fall. But anyway, I just got to get that off my chest because it's like, people react to things before they understand the other layers to it.
Yeah. And he did have two goals. So there is that, right?
Right.
There was a lot at play there. So
I'm telling you for a fact, from talking to every front office in the league over the last month, there were more teams calling on Cole Palmieri and Nick Foligno than there were teams calling on Taylor Hall. That's just a fact. Now, you can disagree with the fact that happened. I got no problem with that. I'm just telling you what the facts are.
I am totally with you, and I think it's going to be fun to watch. And I get it. I love. It was a huge win, really, for Boston in a shootout, as it turns out, against Buffalo, because they're not. I still think Boston ends up in fourth in the East, but I got to tell you, love the Rangers, right? The Rangers are cooking. They are, they are going to put some heat on Boston. So this is, I'll ask this as a question. I feel kind of a little bit let down as we head past the trade deadline now into the stretch drive. Teams are in that, what are we talking, less than 20 games, but certainly now, 14, 15 games left, depending on where you're at in your schedule. But the actual playoff races are a little bit muted, right? Like it's hard to imagine now a lot of teams that are in fifth or sixth place in their respective divisions making a charge. There's a bit of a gap, is my point. But the Rangers, I think, are going to keep the heat on Boston. I love that. I love the drama there. It's great for a young Ranger team, even if they don't make it. But I got to tell you, the Bruins, they don't get to take a week off, right? If you're the Bruins, right? You've got to keep charging forward, because I think the Rangers are going to stay in the hunt right down the stretch.
Yeah, and I say this I love where this Rangers program is headed. I'm, first of all, kudos to Jeff Gordon and the Rangers front office for not doing anything foolish at the trade deadline. Not that I thought they would have, but the Rangers historically love the trade deadline. So this was a great example of keep your assets and wait till the offseason. The Rangers are doing that, which is really smart. They're going to have cap space. Obviously, I feel like getting a first or a second line center would be a tremendous add to where this program is headed. So all those things are really positive for me for this. But I will say, when I look at this playoff race that you just described, I and again, I say this is not a criticism. This is kind of fun. But I feel like the Rangers are like that baseball team in September every year that was out of it and suddenly gets on a 10-game winning streak because it's house money. It's sort of like, oh, this is fun. You know, they're not expected to make it in. People had counted them out. And I think they're just enjoying it. And that's what I'm seeing when I'm watching the Rangers play. And that's dangerous. But I do think the Bruins will get in.
Yeah, good point. All right. What else? Who else do we like at the sort of the, you know, that are clubhouse leaders, as it were, in terms of Stanley Cup contention? You know, you mentioned Kyle Palmieri. You know, Lou Lamoriello, once again, just, you know, stepping to the plate, crushing the ball to the wall. I love both Kyle Palmieri and Travis Ajak in that lineup, given the way the East is shaping up. That East is going to be a ton of fun come playoff time. I don't know how it shapes up, but I think all those teams, Washington, Pittsburgh, Islanders, Boston, they're better than they were 48 hours ago, 72 hours ago, you know, in the days leading up to the trade deadline. But I do like the Islanders again.
So the Islanders are my pick to get out of the division. I think they're going to the league semifinals. Yeah. And that's, I know Washington will be a lot of people's picks, and I could very well be Washington. I don't know how Pittsburgh keeps winning, by the way. They had a million injuries over the last 6 weeks, and they put in these taxi squad players, and they just keep winning. I mean, it's funny. You talk about culture and legacy players, and you can tell a franchise that's done a lot of winning because, you know, and I know some people don't believe in all this stuff. I don't care. I'm telling you it exists. The Penguins culture is showing itself this season. Okay. On paper, this to me was a bubble team this year. You know, they're starting the window's starting to close and don't have a lot of young guys coming up, and it's just starting to, let's, you know, try to patch this up. And I'll tell you what.
They have a management change in the middle of the season.
Yeah. and I think, you know, great coaching, the Crosby Malkin culture, Letang, it manifests itself. I mean, they thrive under adversity. Now, I'm not high on their playoff chances, but it's just what they're doing is really impressive, I have to say. I wanted to point that out. But if you're going to make me pick a team, I think it's the Islanders. The Islanders are built for playoff hockey. You know, they make so few mistakes, and they terrorize you when you make one. You know, I just think that they're going to be so hard to beat. And again, adding Palmieri and Zajac was a terrific work by Lou Lamoriello, no question about it. They bring in Coburn, who knows how many games he's going to end up playing, right? But you talk to the people in Tampa, Scotty, as I know you have. What do they have to say about bringing Coburn over the years he was there? You know?
He's a rock, yeah.
Like, just an amazing leader, just infectious with his attitude and leadership. And I remember him being in Tampa for a playoff series. I don't remember what year, but he wasn't in the lineup. And, you know, you kind of wonder how veterans will take that at that point. First guy on the ice for the optional.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. I mean, that's – Lou Lamoriello knows how to find those guys. And, yeah, I think the Islanders are my pick there.
Yep. Former Atlanta Thrasher, by the way.
Oh, I knew that was coming. is that an official Thrasher's Twitter account, that Atlanta Thrasher's account, or is it a fan?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. Yeah, it's fake. It's beautiful. But I love, they tweeted on deadline day, we're done for the day.
No,
a lot of people were retweeting it. Whoever runs it, I have no idea.
That's great. So you mentioned Pittsburgh. I'm curious what you make, we talked a lot about, you know, who might go and what teams might do. And when I looked at the Kings and, you know, and having Drew Doughty on the show a couple weeks ago, the one guy that didn't seem to be in the mix, and I know actually Lisa Dillman and I had talked about this a few weeks ago, then, and the feeling seemed to be that Jeff Carter really was, you know, he's been in LA a long time. He won two cups there. Wasn't really, you know, he didn't really want to go anywhere.
That would shock me. That deal absolutely shocked me.
Well, to me, it's an obvious, you go back to, we talked about the change in management there, but Ron Hextall, who was a critical part of Dean Lombardi's staff in building the two Stanley Cup winners in Los Angeles, is there any question that Ron Hexwell's connection with Jeff Carter and the LA Kings organization would have been critical in this. And I talked to a GM. He was like, I love this move. Loves Jeff Carter in that Pittsburgh lineup. And I go back to what you were talking about, the culture there. Obviously, you know, the three Stanley Cups during the Crosby era, all that kind of stuff. And the idea that Jeff Carter, who's been mostly a winger, even though he, you know, his traditional role when he was an NHL star was as a center, but he's been on the wing. This GM was like, he still shoots the puck like so few players.
Super
in the
smart
NHL.
Player. Yeah.
So I love that ad. I just think it's, I think that has, I don't know if the Penguins can get out of the East. It's fascinating. Especially Washington Islanders, Pittsburgh right now. It's going to be fascinating to see. I love Jeff Carter there.
There's a lot to chew on here. First of all, I love that Bob McKenzie broke the trade on Sunday night because who's in semi-retirement, just sort of walks into a trade deadline and breaks one of the biggest trades. Man, I love working with that guy. There's a lot to chew on here. So in the last couple of years, when there were teams calling on Jeff Carter, basically, I don't want to get in trouble when I say this. I don't know if I should share this, but basically Jeff Carter was like, from what I can gather, you know, he's never told me this, but I've heard through secondhand sources that the insinuation was, if you trade me, I'll retire. And then the Kings were going to be saddled with some pretty bad cap recapture penalties.
Right.
So Jeff Carter really controlled his fate. So clearly he gave this his blessing is what I'm saying. And the other thing I want to say is that, and you're right, there's no question that if it's not Ron Hexall involved, I don't think Jeff Carter, you know, goes anywhere. But I have to double check this because I forgot. You know that he's currently in the 10th year of that 11-year contract that he signed in Philadelphia in November of 2010, which is a famous contract for all kinds of reasons. Obviously, in the 2012 CBA, they curbed it down to 8-year max, right? But
right, yes.
When he signed this deal, there's a rather famous story of him trying to get assurance because he was too young to get a no move when he signed it. Of him trying to get assurances from the Flyers that he would not be dealt, because the deal at the time, he was a young star, was seen as being to some degree cap friendly, right? I mean, the cap hit is $5.27 million a year over 11 years, but he was willing to do that because the Flyers, you know, they went to the Cup final in 2010. Yeah.
Yep.
They were seen as being on the cusp of, you know, him, Mike Richards, and the young Claude Giroux, you know, on their way. And so Carter signs a deal that, you know, probably could have gotten a bit more, you know, but okay, let's keep the band together. And then, of course, traded to Columbus.
did not work out.
Where he had no intention of ever embracing. And I'm sure now Jeff Carter with age will say, I probably didn't handle that the best. But yeah, next year he's entering the final year of an 11-year deal. it's kind of neat. And in real life, by the way, he makes $2 million this year, makes $2 million next year. So the cash is a lot lower than the cap number, although for a team like the Penguins, that's always at the cap. That's kind of meaningless. But, you know, we'll see what happens with Jeff Carter. Like, is he meaning to play next year in Pittsburgh or not, right? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think his comments, initial comments were, yeah, no, I'm fully, you know, I'm on board. And again, I'm with you. I don't know what happens. That Pittsburgh team, this Pittsburgh team puts me in mind a little bit of 2017. You know, again, you're coming off a cup win and Chris Letang was injured. And it's just like, you know, I think it was easy to not ignore, but you sort of, okay, this can't happen for the Penguins. And there's a little bit of that kind of, at least in my mind, there's a little bit of that, oh, you know what? I don't think we should sleep on this team. And again, you know, it's still way too early. It's still way too tight. But, you know, we've been a couple of years now without a Pittsburgh-Washington playoff series. So,
You're just trying to get yourself to Shales in Pittsburgh is what you're really trying to do.
I've been in a closet in my house in Decatur. I have barely left this room for a year and a half. Yes, I would love a Pittsburgh-Washington series.
Well, another Scott Burnside birthday in Pittsburgh.
That's it, exactly. All right, we're getting towards the end. We're going to take another break in a few minutes, but let's... what deal, what team, what player were you like, oh, okay, I wonder how that'll work out. Or I like that a lot.
So I don't think that they...
I put some bone.
Yeah, I don't think they needed anything. Vegas has been rocking it all year, but it's interesting. You know, my favorite expression is actions speak louder than words. They were in on Taylor Hall and they were in on Nick Foligno.
Yeah.
So what does that tell you? I don't know. Like, it's just one of those things where Vegas gets in on all the action.
Up a lot for Matthias Janmark.
Well, he because he ended up overnight from Sunday to Monday being the number one player in the TSN trade bait board. That's why. But he's I think he's an underrated player. I know you didn't read your winners and losers deadline piece. You weren't a big fan of the move. You know, there was pretty good interest in him. The Blackhawks were entertaining a few offers there. And so Stan Bowman did a pretty good job leveraging that out. But who knows? Let's see. You know, one of the things, and again, I'm not castigating you for writing a winners and losers. That's your job. But I do find the exercise of judging winners and losers on deadline day may be the most useless thing alive. I know fans love it. But
is it more useless than predicting award winners in training camp?
Yeah, also. No, because the point is, I'll tell you who the winners and losers are after the cups awarded. I mean, this is one of my, one of my favorite ones is Antoine Vermette looked like one of the most useless trade deadline additions in the history of the trade deadline for the longest time in 2015 until he scored an overtime in the cup final. No, but I mean, that's the point of all this. It's sort of like, you know, Joel Quenneville didn't seem to trust him, and he was a healthy scratch at times, fourth line, and then bang. I think, I don't know if it was injuries, I can't remember now, but overtime cup final, there you go. That's why you go get Antoine Vermette at the deadline. And so, you know, do I know what Janmark's going to be in Vegas? No, but I mean, if he scores some big goals, some key moments, and the Vegas wins the cup, then we'll know that they had a good deadline, right?
Yeah, no, that's right. And you know, I'm a big boy. You can say whatever you want.
No, you're not the only one. Everyone does winners and losers on deadline day, but I'm just saying, not to mention the deals that involve draft picks that we won't see those players for 6 years. I mean,
that's it exactly. You know. And it's going to be it will be interesting because my point only was that Janmark has gone a little bit dry and who knows? Maybe it's a fit there, maybe the spin is this isn't piling on Matthias Janmark. He's a great kid and he's been through a lot. And maybe the story is how well Stan Bowman did in getting the kind of return he did for a player who's been pretty icy cold. So
yeah, and Stan Bowman had a good deadline overall. I mean, that deal with Florida, which was last Thursday, I think. You know, again, that was one of those salary cap market deals, right? And I thought he got a pretty good return. Can they figure out, the first round pick Borgstrom, supposed to be a really good player, right? Hasn't Florida couldn't figure him out. And of course, Riley Sheehan, I think Riley Stillman, the young defenseman is really the get there. But they got all that because cash is king and the cap space is king and Florida needed to move money so that they could do other things. And again, good job by Bill Zito because that set up what he ended up doing, with Brandon Montour, signing Gusev. So Zito did some interesting things there. But again, in terms of the cap, I thought Stan Bowman handled things well.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about Billy Zito and Florida, interesting team. They come up with a big
hockey deal at the end.
Yeah, hockey deal at the end. But also, there were a couple of things, and there were a couple of young assets that went out, as you mentioned, in that deal with Chicago. And you know, okay, there's still lots to like about the youth in that Florida team. I love Brandon Montour's ad, and I know everybody who is in Florida has a certain stain on them, right? Like there's a stink on them. I there's no other way to put it. And so to me, it's whether it's Taylor Hall or Brandon Montour or Curtis Lazar, who I think has a chance to really thrive in Boston. But it is going to take some time. But I talked to a scout who was like, you know that Brandon Montour was a good player in Anaheim. Buffalo gave up a first round pick and a prospect for him. He's going to be, he doesn't take Aaron Ekblad's place, but he fills an obvious need there. And I think Gusev, whatever happened in Jersey clearly ran out of runway there. But is he like Alex Galchenyuk, right? Who, right. you know, got another chance and he's shown he can play at the NHL level. I just thought some interesting things for a Florida team that, you know, they'd lost three in a row heading into the trade deadline, maybe a little bit below Carolina and Tampa now in that pecking order. But mm-hmm. I thought that was a really nice trade period for Bill Zito in his first year.
Yeah. I love, so he made three key moves. I love two of them big time. I thought Montour is going to be one of those where you look back, wow, that was smart. Like Montour is going to find his game in Florida. I think getting Gusa for free is like, why not? I mean, this guy, big time scorer in the KHL, just needs to find himself. He got him for nothing. I'm not sure about the Sam Bennett deal. Not sure. I think everyone keeps waiting for Sam Bennett to be that first round guy. And I think he's played long enough where I think we do know what he is. And that's okay. He's a good player. But I think he's a second slash third liner, hard on the puck. But I don't think there's much offensive ceiling there. And so I think he overpaid a bit. I think Calgary right now looks like they got the edge on that deal a bit. Essentially got two second rounders. I mean, they got a second rounder in 2022, and then they got this kid, Emil Heinemann, who I talked to a couple of teams, so they're pretty high on him. He was drafted in the second round last year. So we'll see. Again, here I am trying to judge this deal, and like I said, we won't know really the Calgary end for a number of years. No.
You're doing your own winners and losers.
Yeah, I know, I am. I'm speaking from both sides of my mouth. Like, again, I think Zito had a really good deadline period. I think he, you know, his hands are tied a bit and he can't do a million different things there. But I'd like to look back on this one. This is an interesting one.
All right. Just before we take our final break, I mentioned, you know, the playoff races, maybe there aren't a lot, you know, can the Rangers keep the heat on Boston right now as we're chatting? They're 4 points back, but they've played two more games and now games in hand become critical, right? I mean, it's just the reality of it now that we're down to teams with 15 or 16 games left. Is there a playoff race that you think is still, like, is there still a playoff race that you believe will give us some juice down the stretch? Is there one that you're particularly interested in?
You know, the Flames have been written off by a lot of people. And I made the point in my interview with Brad Treliving for the deadline of mentioning that it doesn't look good. And listen, by his own actions, I mean, he's trading away Sam Bennett and David Rittich. He's acknowledging the odds. But, you know, big win by the Flames in Toronto last night as we tape this. They're in Montreal tonight. They have the Habs, I think. I don't have it in front of me. I think five more times, don't they, for the end of the year, starting tonight?
I don't know. It's a lot.
Listen, the Habs have three games in hand, and the Habs are 6 points ahead. So I understand math, believe it or not. I'm not very good at math, but I understand the odds. The Habs have not, I mean, big win by Montreal Monday night over the Leafs, for sure. They were full value for that win. But they're so inconsistent. And I don't know. I have this weird feeling that Calgary-Montreal is going to be a thing. I still think the Habs make it in, but I think they make it in with a sweat, maybe. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. The math is not in the Flames category, and they've been so inconsistent. But to your point, that was, you know, a huge win over their former pal, Dave Rittich. I don't know. They're 3-7 in their last 10. I don't know. I don't see it happening, but it would be fun if there was some drama. Because really, there's the only drama right now is who finishes second and third. And really, all that matters is home ice, really.
And part of my concern for the Habs is more just that their schedule continues to knock them over the head. 4 games a week. They have a 3-4 the rest of the way. Every week. So it just, you can see there are nights where they don't have their legs, or some nights they have their legs. When they played that third game in 4 nights last week against Winnipeg, where they actually outshot the Jets and they actually had a lot of energy for a team playing 3 games in 4 nights, but they made a number of mental miscues that ended up in their net. So it's a lot that, you know, the grind of the Habs schedule is the only reason when I look at Calgary having 5 games against them. But at the end of the day, again, I'm picking Montreal to make it.
Yeah, Flames would basically have to go 4-1 because that's what you have to do now, right? You have
to look probably in regulation too, not just 4-1. Like if those are four overtime wins, that's a win for Montreal.
Yeah, exactly. All right, just one final thing, because I want to touch on a team that didn't do anything at trade deadline, and it sort of plays into our discussion of playoff races. And again, this, I'm not.
You're going to say St. Louis.
I am going to say St. Louis, and you and I talked about Arizona. You know, they're a point behind St. Louis, but they play two more games. The Blues, and we talked about Doug Armstrong, the GM there, who's never been afraid to make a move if he feels that he needs to,
if he's pissed off.
Exactly. Well, they won three in a row.
Kevin gone. Paul Stastny gone.
They won three in a row, so he stepped back from the phone and didn't trade. Yeah, Mike Hoffman, Tyler Bozak.
I'm shocked Mike Hoffman wasn't dealt. Because I thought that just because it seems like Craig Berube doesn't really want to play Mike Hoffman at times, I thought that might just be, it's got nothing to do with how we're playing or where we are in the standings. It's just not been a fit. I thought he was just going to trade him for that reason. But,
right.
You know, I don't know. They stepped back and you know, Doug Armstrong explained everything. I thought Jeremy Rutherford wrote a great piece sort of explaining it all, but clearly believes that his 2019 Cup champion roster has a second gear here. And I don't blame him. I you know, there's one point separating the Blues and the Coyotes. It feels like 10. Right?
And San Jose, listen, you mentioned the Sharks.
I think the Sharks are a bigger threat to St. Louis than Arizona is right now, just the way the Coyotes are playing.
Well, 4 points back, same number of games. They each have 15 games left. So it's still, to me, I like that Doug Armstrong was like, okay, and like we joke about it, but yeah, he stepped back, teams responded a bit. And to me, this is a team that, I love the idea that let's assume the Blues hang in there and they get the four spot. The Blues are that team, I think, that could really bite a team like Colorado or Vegas. Colorado's going to win that division, but
yeah, I think and get St. Louis for it.
Yeah, exactly. I love that part of it.
I mean, all due respect to the Wild, who have been one of the, you know, like I think Minnesota Wild are maxing out their talent and you know, good job by that organization, I think, of basically saying, this is who we are. We're still a team in transition under GM Bill Guerin, but we're going to play our asses off. That's the Minnesota Wild. But there's zero chance they win a playoff series in that division. I'm sorry. I don't know. Do you agree or not?
Zero is a very low
not
number.
Zero, it's but I mean, they're going to play Vegas or Colorado in the first round. I mean,
I know it doesn't look good.
All right, I'll give them a 25% chance. How about that?
25? Well, you went from zero to 25.
Well, because you made me feel guilty.
12.5.
And I love the fans, the beautiful hockey fans of Minnesota.
No, it's great. No, that's the reality. You know, and that's perfect. That's why Bill Guerin in Minnesota didn't. No, he's not going crazy making an ad just because they're locked into third place. He understands. So, no, I'm with you. All right. We're going to take a break. And then we're going to.
Of course, I never thought Columbus would be Tampa Bay a couple of years ago either. So
I know. I gave them a 68% chance of winning that series. All right. That's not true. That is a series that I often think of 2018. Was that 18 or was that 19? Whatever year it was, must have been. Whatever year it was, must have been 19. It was 2019. I went 0-for-8 in my first round playoff prediction. It was 19 because it was the year that Carolina knocked off Washington in double overtime in Game 7. I went 0-for-8 in the first round. So there you go. Predictions.
You are. A gentle soul for reminding everyone of that.
All right. Yeah, it won't be the first time. I owned it. I'm not afraid of that.
I don't even do picks anymore. I sleep better at night.
No, I know. Okay.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key.
Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. Whether you're sending emails or writing a Slack message, the last thing you want is a grammatical error. It just looks unprofessional. Just a little bit of help from Grammarly can make a big impact on your work day to day. 96% of Grammarly users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. It works across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, tone suggestions help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Save time with one click and go from editing drafts in hours to seconds. 93% of professionals using Grammarly Premium report that it helps them get more work done. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
All right, that's a couple of good questions here that help round out our post trade deadline discussion. This is a good one from Guy Westhead. He wonders what didn't happen on deadline day that might happen this summer. So something that maybe something you were looking for. Because we and I'll give you some time to think. But we talked about a guy like Bob Murray in Anaheim, and he's Ricard Raquel, maybe We talked about players with term basically, Anyway, is there something you think, I didn't think that would happen Monday, but let's circle back before the July draft?
Well, first of all, before I answer specifically, great question, by the way. This offseason, again, like the Vegas offseason was when Vegas entered the league in the expansion draft, this offseason is going to be dizzying. The management around this expansion draft, the impact of the flat cap, this is going to be a fascinating offseason. So way busier than we had entering the trade deadline, first of all. I can tell you from talking to all these front offices, they're kind of holding their breath at what's coming here. But yeah, there's Anaheim's a great example. I mean, Ricard Raquel and Josh Manson in particular will have a year left on their deals after this year. And so pretty obvious, either sign them to extensions or trade them, because you're not letting them walk into the free agency and it's a team in transition, right? They got a lot of good young pieces there in Anaheim. I got to think one of them gets dealt by Money's on Raquel. Calgary is unbelievably fascinating to me. Again, they were never going to make big deals at this deadline. I know Sam Bennett was a hockey deal, but the whole Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan question has to be answered this offseason either way, right? I mean, you have to decide once and for all if you're in for the long haul with these guys or not. I suspect one of them gets dealt this offseason. Again, I could be wrong, but I think this is finally the time.
When the Flames go 5-0 against Montreal,
right? That'll be a whole different thing. And go on to win the cup, yeah. Then I'll take those words back.
And when they knock off the Leafs and Dave Rittich in double overtime in Game 7. So anyway, yeah.
Buffalo. Obviously, Buffalo is Jack Eichel. Kevin Adams has to sit down, maybe the Pegulas, with Jack Eichel and his camp after this season and say, all right, what are we doing? Like, is your heart in this? Are you committed to us? Do we need to move you? And by the way, it's not just, I'm always careful not to just make it a one-way conversation. It's not just about what Jack Eichel wants. What do the Sabres want? Should they be trying to move him? So there's a pretty important conversation coming there. And that would be obviously the marquee name on the market in the offseason if they decide to go that route.
Yeah. I got to tell you, the team I'm fascinated by did a little tinkering at the deadline. But again, another team that, if the offseason looms large. But man, Philadelphia, what passed in the standings by the Rangers?
Speaking of wrong predictions, I thought they'd be right. My pick was that the Islanders and Flyers would battle for first in the East. So so give me a 50-50 on that one. Yeah. I was so wrong about the Flyers. And in retrospect, I forget who told me this, but it's interesting. They have a fascinating roster in that their core players are either over 30 or under 25. They have very few players. I don't have it in front of me, but someone was telling me this, that most championship teams have a lot of their core players between 25 and 30. And they have this interesting sort of the way this is all transitioned. A lot of young guys and a lot of young guys that struggle this year, but are going to be good players, right? Yep. And older guys. And so the point that was made is maybe we should have, when you looked at that, should have known that this might have been one of those step back years for them as they continue to, they basically need all those, you know, they need the young guys to take that next step, and they clearly didn't happen this year. But let's also not, you and I are both big fans of Carter Hart, loved having him on the podcast. You wrote a huge feature on him. He's going to be okay, but yeah, this was a disaster of a season.
Yeah, no, it's true. Well, that'll be the challenge when Chuck Fletcher and his staff sit down, and he sits down with AV and the coaches. There's so much to love about that team and the organization. And maybe part of what, is when they sit down is, okay, we can't lose our minds, right? Like we have to accept that this was a train wreck and a huge step back. And yes, Carter Hart was, he is still a kid. Oh my God, he's 22 years old.
For sure.
Maybe that's part of what it is. But I tell you, the Aussie, because, the pressure, and there should be pressure, right? I was with you. I thought an absolute lock to make the playoffs in the East. I thought they'd be a top two, maybe three. But it never occurred to me. Well, it goes back to what you were talking about, Pittsburgh. Are they a bubble team? I thought Philly was locked into that top three for sure. So anyway, I'm curious to see what happens.
Yeah, and one of the things that they're going to have to figure out, and I think it might be the most important, well, they need to get another top four defenseman, that's obvious, but after Matt Niskanen's retirement. But I think the single most important decision the Flyers make is finding a 1A, 1B-ish guy to compete with Carter Hart. I think Carter Hart needs that. And Brian Elliott has done a terrific job this year, but he's 36. I think they need an upgrade over Brian to really make this who's the number one guy in Philly? I think that's the push that Carter Hart needs. And so who is that guy? I mean, we always talk about the goalie carousel, and I'm not pretending I have the exact answer here, but can you squeeze out a bit more from a James Reimer, or is it a David Rittich, or is it Jonathan Bernier? I don't know. You try to figure out the guy, but they need to find that guy to come in and say, there's a chance for you to play 40 games here and really push Carter Hart. I think that's going to be a really important thing for Philly.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, we saw it with Semyon Varlamov and Thomas Greiss last year. And
Greiss.
I like to call him Greiss. All right, final question here. There were a couple about the Winnipeg Jets, one from Mei Tway and another from Brayson. I'm going to go with this question, which I'm really curious about. Of course, the Jets bring in Jordy Benn. But we talked a lot about that's a team that still needs a top four blue liner. And I don't think it really matters whether it's a right-hand shot or a left-hand shot, but somebody maybe to slide into that top four. Is there someone, the question is, which top four defenseman do you think will land in Winnipeg this offseason? You got any thoughts on that?
That's interesting. Well, it's funny. We just mentioned Josh Manson. I think Manson ends up signing an extension and playing his career in Anaheim is what I predict, but he would have been such a good fit in Winnipeg. And I know the Jets had, my understanding is, had some interest in him. But, he's got a no trade clause. I mean, who knows how all that played out, but, he's an interesting guy. I still think Ekholm's a possibility. He was the original guy that I loved for Winnipeg, as you know, Scotty, not just me. Yeah. Because Nashville, who made the right decision to keep him now that they're look like a playoff team or a chance to be a playoff team, it's actually, I think, going to end up being more beneficial to the Predators to wait until after the Seattle expansion draft to figure out Ekholm. Because a lot of the teams that were interested in Ekholm, even when Nashville were sellers for a short time, were really scared about how it was going to impact their ability to deal with Ron Francis if they traded for him, right? So I'm giving up these assets to get him, and then I got to give up these assets to Ron Francis so that you don't take this, because now my third best defenseman becomes the guy I got to expose.
Right.
So you wait until Seattle does its thing, and then you go to Ekholm. To me, if I'm David Poile in Nashville, and you offer what you believe is an extension that makes sense for the team. And he frankly has been underpaid. So this is why this is going to be a bit sensitive. He may say, no, I'm not signing that. Or he may sign it, by the way. But if he says no, and he's entering the final year of his deal, I think if you're David Poile, you have no choice. You have to trade him. And not only trade him after the expansion draft, but potentially allow, I believe his agent's Kurt Overhart, allow Kurt Overhart to sort of run the deal a bit with you. In other words, you might get more if you're in Nashville for Ekholm if he's actually traded as a sign, as signing to a long-term deal with his new team. So that's a big one for me, and I would like Winnipeg to get in on that because I think he'd be an unbelievable fit in their top four.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, it's going to be, listen, it's going to be a blur, you know, the playoffs in, you know, call it 5 weeks or whenever. And then, of course, the late July expansion draft and the draft. Yeah, it's going to be, it's not going to be a lot of vacation time for you, my friend. I don't want to break it to you. But
yeah, I'll just push push a little vacay into September. You just don't know that yet. Right. I haven't told you yet. Right.
All right. What else we got going on in the podcast world? How about this? Our good pal, Chris Johnson from Sportsnet, joins Jonas Siegel and James Myrtle on the Leaf Report. I saw CJ on TV last night. He is like skinny as a rail.
He's been running like crazy through the pandemic. He's Mr. He's Forrest Gump.
Yeah, he's just going to say that. Run, CJ, run.
I love that guy.
I love that guy too. All right. That's when we get, this is the, when, you know, I keep thinking about, you know, when life returns to normal or something, that, you know, we're all going to get together sometime and it's not going to be pretty.
And play shuffleboard.
Yeah, we're going to do something. Also, Matt Hendricks, the Assistant Director of Player Development for the Minnesota Wild, joins Mike Russo this week on Straight from the Sword.
Do you think Russo's gone through every single person who works for the Wild this year? No, I mean, that's his job. I'm just saying, like, I think it's amazing. And it's probably an honor to go on his podcast, right? If you work for the Wild, I would think.
Oh, my God. Well, you'd be afraid not to, right? Like, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I'd be afraid if Russo calls me, and he never does, but if Russo calls me and says, come on the podcast, I'm making time. In fact, I'm blowing you off to go on Russo's podcast.
Duly noted.
Yeah, that's right. Matt Hendricks is an outstanding human being. So
great. He was a great character guy. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was great. And you know what? And he finished up in Winnipeg. I remember when we were there covering the Jets and Nashville, and they called him the, I want to say they called him the Tin Man or something like that. Because I remember sitting down with him in the dressing room, both his knees with these giant braces on. But man, they loved him there.
Three years in Washington. I was checking to make sure my memory isn't as bad as it used to be. Edmonton, Winnipeg, Minnesota. Beloved everywhere he played.
True that. Anyway, you should check that out on Mike Russo's podcast, Straight from the Source.
Okay, wrap it up. That's been a long podcast. Let's go.
Listen, I'm trying to get there. You started to talk about Forrest Gump. So anyway, you should check out our comment section for each podcast episode at The Athletic app and rate and subscribe to The Athletic Hockey Show on Apple. And if you aren't a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/hockeyshow and receive a subscription for just $3.99 per month.
Do it.
Yes. Good job by you, my friend. Next week. Oh, it's going to be exciting next week. I don't want to say anything, no, just in case it goes off the rails.
Yeah, don't say a word.
Next week, I won't say a word, but next week, going to be outstanding. So don't miss that.
Very special edition of this podcast.
All right, brother. Take care.
Right on.